So we are going to be looking at a song. You're reading this and you're thinking, hey, that's a song title. It is. You are right. So we're going to be looking at this song tonight and kind of seeing how it plays out in our faith, in our lives, and examining it by way of Scripture and the concept that it gives to us. We saw thee not. If you look at the, you may not be able to read that from where you're sitting, but it's number 726 if you actually want to read that. When we look at the text, we have several things that come out, jump out at you. And we'll kind of be going through these, every one of these. But you look at this text. This was written by Ann Richer in 1834. And it actually hasn't really changed much since that time. There are other songs that we have that are written back in the 1800s. And nowadays we think anything in the 1900s is old. But, you know, anyway. Yeah, Ivan's like, nope. Okay, so anyway. So this hasn't changed since then. But it speaks a lot to us. And I want to kind of start off by looking how the even members of the church in the first century could sing this song. Like we could, and have the same meaning. This is a song of faith. It acknowledges that we were not there to see many of the physical things that happened and took place. How many of you have events in your mind, biblical events in your mind, that you wish you were there to see? Any of you guys have those? Kind of wish I was there at Mount Sinai, not going to lie. I would have liked to have seen that. There's some others we'll kind of talk about tonight that I'd like to be a part of. But just to be a fly on the wall, walking around listening to Jesus preach, would that not have been awesome? I think that would have been great. And so this acknowledges that we weren't able to be there, but we believe. And so in singing this song, when we sing it, we didn't see what we didn't see, and then but we believe, and we sing that with conviction. And so this plays in very very closely to what Peter writes to the church in 1 Peter chapter 1, verses 6 through 9. 1 Peter chapter 1, verses 6 through 9. In this you greatly rejoice, even though now for a little while, if necessary, you have been distressed by various trials. Does that happen? Does that still happen? That people are distressed by various trials? Still happens, hasn't changed much. So the proof of your faith being more precious than gold, which is perishable, even though tested by fire, you may be found to result in praise and glory and honor at the revelation of Jesus Christ. And though you have not seen Him, you love Him. And though you do not see Him now, but believe in Him, you greatly rejoice with joy inexpressible and full of glory, obtaining the outcome of your faith, the salvation of your souls. So as Peter's writing to these Christians, there were Christians in the first century that didn't see Jesus, that didn't see His earthly ministry, that didn't see any of those things take place and have the same kind of faith that we have because they believe on it based on the message of those who were eyewitnesses. It's like, oh, it's harder for us to have faith because, you know, we didn't get to see all those things. Not everybody did. Not everybody did. And Peter's writing to a group of people who didn't. But what does he say about their faith? It's more precious than gold. It's tested by fire. But the outcome of your faith, obtaining as the outcome of your faith the salvation of your souls. Is seeing these things necessary to believe? No. And we'll see also that seeing isn't always believing as well. Matthew chapter 13, verse 13, when Jesus was speaking, he said, therefore I speak to them in parables, because while seeing they do not see, and while hearing they do not hear, nor do they understand. Were there people that Jesus could not convince that He was the Son of God? Were there people that were like that? Here's the master teacher, inspired by God, directly message from God to Christ, giving this message to them, and He didn't convince everybody. Seeing isn't necessarily believing. And so our faith is not any less than anybody else. And so we must, like we do today, we must believe on the message of others. Luke chapter 1, this is all intro, by the way. We haven't got to, if you're wondering if I'm not, Josh, you're doing it again, you're not progressing. This is just intro. Okay, so we'll get to that in a minute. But Luke chapter 1, verses 1 through 4, Luke writes this letter to this guy named Theophilus. It could have been an actual person with the name Theophilus, which would have been Difficult to learn how to spell when you're in first grade, second grade, right? The other option is that this was just a general letter to those who love God, is what that name suggests. But either way, it says, "Inasmuch as many have undertaken to compile an account of the things accomplished among us, just as they were handed down to us by those who from the beginning were eyewitnesses and servants of the word, it seemed fitting to me as well, having investigated everything carefully from the beginning, to write it out for you in consecutive order, most excellent Theophilus, so that you may know the exact truth about the things which you have been taught." The gospel was compiled so that people would know the exact truth. In 1 John, John writes something very similar. I don't need insurance, thank you. So John writes something very similar. 1 John chapter 1, verses 1 through 4. He says, "What was from the beginning, what we have heard, what we have seen with our eyes, what we have looked at and touched with our hands concerning the word of life." How many of you, when you were a kid, you got a shiny new toy, whatever toy that is, Christmas maybe, and you show it to a friend, or maybe like your sibling sees it and says, "Oh, can I see it?" What are you supposed to say in that moment? No, because you see with your eyes, not with your hands, right? Like but when we see something, right, we want to be a part of it. I want to touch it. Seeing it is being more involved than just, okay, I saw it, but I actually want to like hold it and see it. And so John here is saying, we've seen the Christ. We didn't just see him, we touched him, we were a part of him, we did all these things with him. Why is he saying these things? Any ideas as to why he would use these types of words in connection with the Christ? I'm sorry? He's a true eyewitness. He's talking about, I was there. I was right there with him. A very true eyewitness. Any other ideas? Yes. Yes. So validity to what he's saying. I'm not getting this information second or third hand. I heard it right from Christ. I was right there, an eyewitness of these things. And he's writing to people who weren't necessarily those who saw these things. He's also writing to people as others were teaching at the time, that Christ actually didn't physically come in the flesh. He came just as this ghost, this ether that floated around. And so he actually didn't suffer, and he actually didn't do these things, and we'll kind of see how even Christ himself did some things to try to dispel that future teaching. And so he's saying, we did these things concerning the word of life, and the life was manifest, and we have seen and testify and proclaim to you the eternal life, which was from the Father, was manifested to us, but we have seen and heard, we proclaim to you also, so that you too may have fellowship with us. And indeed our fellowship is with the Father and with his Son, Jesus Christ. These things we write so that your joy may be made complete. And so over and over again, there's this message from the New Testament writers that he lived, he existed. And you need to be able to trust the message. And we cannot think in our hearts that, well, maybe my faith isn't as good as the faith of those who were in the first century. No, by no means. Our faith, in many cases, is exactly the same as those in the first century. And so we must not doubt or diminish where we are in our faith. Keep growing, but don't doubt or diminish it. So when we look at these chapters, or look at these verses, we're going to kind of see a theme. Verse 1 talks very much about that he lived, he existed. It talks about we didn't see Christ as a child. We didn't see deity become flesh. John chapter 1 verse 14 talks about the word became flesh and dwelt among him, and we saw his glory, the glory of the Father. And so again, the word becoming flesh dwelt among us, and we saw him. And John is beginning to say that this is what they proclaim. We didn't get to see where Jesus lived. We didn't get to see his home. We didn't get to see him growing up. Luke chapter 2, verses 39 and 40 talks about that they lived in Nazareth. Verse 40 talks about he grew in wisdom and stature with both God and men. We didn't see him growing up. We didn't see teenager Jesus. We didn't see that aspect of him. But we believe that it happened. And we didn't see all these events of his earthly ministry, but because it was recorded, we believe. John again writes about this, this very thing, in John chapter 20. John chapter 20, verses 30 and 31. Therefore, many other signs Jesus also performed in the presence of his disciples, which are not written in this book. Which, if you think about it, that'd be a huge book, right? Trying to carry that around. But these have been written so that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and believing you may have life in his name. And you may have heard it said that these specific... So John is writing this inspired, and John is sort of... So Mark is like the Cliff Notes version of the gospel. Luke is very concise and precise. Matthew gives us so much more information in the Jewish background. And then there's John, right? And John takes a very different approach to delivering the gospel as he was inspired to do. But in this text, it says there's a lot of things, but these specific events, these specific things were written that you would believe. Of all the things that were chosen, these were chosen that you would believe. So it caused us to look more earnestly into these things. And so the gospel writers are saying he lived, and we were witnesses of those things. It's interesting that in Acts chapter 2, verse 22, when Peter begins the message, he talks about the Christ that he saw, the man, Jesus the Christ of Nazareth, whom God proved by the miracles and things that he did. He starts off by saying there is this Jesus that lived. You can't deny that he lived. And you can't deny the things that he was doing. They denied it anyway, but you're not supposed to. And so he starts off there. In Acts chapter 10, Peter also, when he preaches to the household of Cornelius, he begins with Jesus that he lived. In Acts chapter 10, verses 37 through 39, begins talking about Christ's life and his ministry, going about doing good and the things that he did, and then goes on to talk about his death. And so the fact that he lived is obviously very, very important. Even people who were secular antagonists of the early church, Romans who were writing letters about this Christ, this Christus, acknowledged that he existed. And so there's even information outside of the Bible speaking to the existence of the Christ. So verse 1 is that he lived. And our faith says we didn't see that, but we believe. But we believe. This next verse talks about the fact that he died. We were not there. We didn't see him lifted up on the cross. As we read about Matthew chapter 27, we did not see those things. I think it would be a difficult thing to see that event, to be there. I think even more difficult knowing... this is just me thinking out loud, but knowing the cost, knowing all the information, and then seeing it literally would be very, very difficult. Sometimes it's difficult just to read and sing about it, but having been there would be even more so. And so we weren't there to see those events. We did not hear his cry, "Forgive them, for they know not what they do," in Luke chapter 30:23. And there were several other things that he said on the cross. "Father, forgive them, they know not what they do. Today thou shalt be with me in paradise." Who is he talking to? So the thief on the cross. So the first one he's talking to God, "Father, forgive them." Second, "Today shalt be with me in paradise." And there's a lot been made of that. But he also spoke to his mother, "Woman, behold thy son. Son, behold thy mother." It's hard to think about being in so much pain. How many of you have been sick before? Have you been sick? Have you broken a limb, an appendage? Were you just all concerned about other people at that time? When you're sick, are you super concerned about other people? Trying to go about and do good? Normally we're not, right? Normally when we're sick, we're not really thinking about other people. Some of you are pointing fingers. Usually in the relationship, in a marriage, one of them is a bigger baby than the other when they're sick. I'll let you guys decide. But Jesus, in the moment that he's there, took the time to think about a thief on the cross beside him. He's hanging in pain, and he was concerned about his mother, or perhaps John. My God, why hast thou forsaken me? And this is not a cry of God saying that, or Christ saying that, that God had forsaken him in that moment. It's not what this is. This is Christ still teaching. Christ is introducing Psalm 22 and introducing in the minds of those who knew the Psalms to see everything that's played out. Psalm 22 prophesies about these events on that day, and they all happened. And so if they would bring that psalm to their mind, they could literally watch these things play out. They cast lots for my garments. They could watch that happen. It was not that God abandoned him in that moment. He was still teaching. I thirst. Humanity. The humanity of the Christ. Father, into thy hands I commend my spirit. And it is finished. So as we look at these things and we see what Christ, he died. He died for us. We weren't there to see those things. We weren't there to see the veil darkened. We weren't there to see it, or the sun darkened and the veil ripped. But we believe he died for us. Romans chapter 5, beginning of verse 6. For while we were still helpless, at the right time Christ died for the ungodly. For one will hardly die for the righteous man, though perhaps for the good man someone would dare even to die. But God demonstrates his own love toward us in that while we were still sinners, he died for us. He did good for us when we were not worthy to receive any kind of good. He died for us. And it would be a sad story if it ended there. But the song goes on, and the gospel message goes on. He arose. We did not gaze into the open tomb as those women did. And I find it interesting, as John records, they go back and they tell, the women go back and tell the disciples what happened, and Peter and the disciple whom the Lord loves goes running back, which we know is John, and they go running back, and John is actually the one telling us this, which is so much fun, and John writes in the inspired record that he beat Peter to the tomb. Just so we're aware of that fact, I beat Peter. But we did not see, we didn't gaze into that open tomb. We did not see him in the upper room with the 12, and this is interesting. If you look over in Luke chapter 24, I find it interesting that Jesus just gets beamed into the room so many times, and then like the first thing he has to say is like, y'all need to chill out, like relax, peace be with you, as he's there. You know, they hadn't seen Star Trek, so they don't know how that works. And so when this happens to them in John chapter 20, or Luke chapter 24, actually just want you to note in verse 11 that the ladies came back to tell the disciples about all the things that had happened. And the disciples jumped up for joy and said, this is exactly like he told us. Nope. But these words appeared to them as nonsense, and they would not believe. The disciples who heard that he was supposed to raise on the third day. All right, now go over to, where am I? I lost myself in my notes. Go over to 36. Verse 36. While they were telling these things, he himself stood in their midst. Now, if we go back, we'll get to that in just a moment. While they were telling these things, the Lord appeared to them in their midst, and they were all startled and frightened, and they thought that they were seeing a spirit. And he said to them, why are you troubled, and why do you have doubts arise in your hearts? See my hands and my feet? What is it? That is I myself. Touch me and see, for a spirit does not have flesh. What is Jesus saying here? I'm not a ghost. This is me. And while they still could not believe it because of their joy and amazement, he said to them, do you have anything to eat? Ghosts definitely don't eat. What happens when a ghost eats or tries to eat? It just falls straight through them. We know that, right? And so he's proving to them, removing all doubt, that he is who he says he is. Touch me. I'm going to eat. Watch me eat. And so he's trying to remove their doubts. And they gave him a piece of fish, and he took it and ate it before them. And so we look at, we were not there, we didn't get to see this event take place. And he begins to tell them about the things they're going to be witness, and he reminds them of the things that they're supposed to be aware of, but we were not there to hear that message. And Mark chapter 16 tells us they didn't believe initially, as we looked in verse 11. They did not believe initially when the report, they should have believed. Look a little farther back in Luke chapter 24. We did not see him on the road to Emmaus. We didn't see him on the road. This is probably one of my favorite kind of resurrection stories of the ones we have. In that we have two men that are walking down the road, going to a village named Emmaus. And they're walking with each other, talking about the things which had taken place after Jesus' death. And they were talking and discussing Jesus himself, approached and traveling with them. Now, they're talking about Jesus, and Jesus kind of sneaks up behind them and, you know, makes it to where they can't recognize him, and he's listening to what they're saying. And as they're going down the path, Jesus kind of nonchalantly says, hey, what are you guys talking about? Have you ever played dumb? Like, okay, my parents use this tactic, and I don't know if your parents use this tactic. They would ask you what actually took place. And you're trying to divine in your mind, do they know already? Or are they really asking? Right? That's a dangerous... But if you just tell the truth all the time, it doesn't matter. Right? Okay. All right. So Jesus is asking, hey, what are you talking about? And one of them, Cleopas, which is, I'm sure he wished he was not named, says, are you the only one visiting Jerusalem and unaware of the things which have happened here in these days? Which being translated, it means, are you living under a rock, right? And so he begins telling them, Jesus says, what things? What are you talking about? And he talks about Jesus and tells them these things that were supposed to have happened. And verse 21, but we were hoping that it was he who was going to redeem Israel. He has no idea what he's saying. Because he did redeem Israel, just not the way he thought. Right, he did do those things, but not the way he thought. And so he begins talking about the women that went or the tomb didn't find him. And then verse 25, Jesus begins to talk, O foolish men, slow to heart to believe in all the prophets. Was it not necessary for the Christ to suffer these things and enter in his glory? And then beginning with Moses and with all the prophets, he explained to them the things concerning himself and the scriptures. Now, fly on the wall lesson that I would like to be a part of would be that one, right? Here's Jesus explaining all these things as they're walking down the street about concerning himself. That would be amazing to hear. And he says, as they approached the village, they were going, he acted like he was going to go on a little farther, right? He acted, you've done that before. Acted like you're working, acted like you're cleaning the room when your mom and dad come in, like you've acted. And so he's acting, and they ask him to stay a little longer and come in and eat with him. And so he says, when he reclined at the table with them, he took the bread and blessed it, and breaking it, he began giving it to them, and then their eyes were opened, and he vanished from their sight. In my opinion, that's rather fun to think about. And they said to one another, were not our hearts burning within us while he was speaking on the road, while he was explaining the scriptures to us? And so, you know what they did? They just sat there and kept it to themselves. They didn't want to go tell anybody. It's not that amazing. No, they got up and they ran the 7 miles back to tell the disciples about everything that happened. And so we weren't there to see these things. We weren't there to witness these things and to hear these messages in that way. But the text, as we sing this song, but we believe, and we believe in the message about his resurrection that was given to us. Paul writes in 1 Corinthians chapter 15 concerning the Christ, beginning in verse 12. He said, now if Christ has preached that he has been raised from the dead, how do some of you say that there's no resurrection from the dead? But if there's no resurrection from the dead, not even Christ has been raised. And if Christ has not been raised, then our preaching is vain. Your faith is also vain. Moreover, we are even found to be false witnesses of God, because we testified against God that he raised Christ, whom he did not raise. In fact, if the dead are not raised, even Christ has not been raised. And if Christ has not been raised, your faith is worthless, and you are still in your sins. So the fact that he arose is a little bit important, as Paul begins to tell them to the Corinthian church that there was no resurrection from the dead is what they're teaching, and he begins to tell them, here's the ramifications of no resurrection from the dead. That everything you believe, you think you believe, is void if there is no resurrection from the dead. And so we see that the importance there. And then lastly, we look at the fourth verse, deals with his ascension. Well, we didn't walk with those that accompanied the Lord during the resurrection. We weren't there at that time. Matthew 28, if you look over there, Matthew chapter 28. The Great Commission, as we've called this last section of Matthew. And we focus on 18 through 20 is a lot of times what you focus on. Beginning verse 16, but the 11 disciples proceeded to Galilee, to the mountain of which Jesus had designated. And when they saw him, they worshipped him, but some were doubtful. Even then. So guys, when we look at these scriptures, and they give us, but some were doubtful. Seeing is not always believing. Please understand that. And I only bring that up for us to validate that our faith is as valid, or more so, obviously, than those who actually got to see Jesus. This song acknowledges all the things we did not get to see, but we still get to stand up with faith and firm conviction, but we believe. And so he spoke to them about his authority. He spoke to them about the things that they were supposed to do, the message they were supposed to carry to all the world. We weren't there to see that, but we believe. Look over again back to Luke chapter 24. Luke 24. Let's start actually beginning in verse 44. Beginning verse 44, he said to them, these are my words which I spake to you while I was still with you, that all things which are written about me in the law of Moses, in the prophets, and the Psalms, must be fulfilled. Then he opened their minds to understand the scriptures. And he said to them, thus it is written that the Christ would suffer and rise again from the dead the third day, and that repentance and forgiveness of sins would be proclaimed in his name to all the nations, beginning in Jerusalem. So again, they were not completely grasping everything to the point that their minds were opened to understand what the law and the prophets and the Psalms had to say concerning Christ. How that worked and the mechanics of it, we don't know, but we know that it happened. And they received these things. And in verse 48, you are witnesses of these things, and behold, I'm sending you forth the promise of my Father upon you, but you are to stay in the city until you're clothed with power from on high. What is he talking about in verse 49 of chapter 24? What is he alluding to? What's that? The Holy Spirit. So we see that play out in Acts chapter 2, and they're not exactly sure what's going to happen. I don't know if you've ever been in a situation where somebody said, hey, just go do this and wait, and this will happen, and you still have no idea what's going to happen. And so in this case, they're waiting. And they were waiting a while. Even there's a point where they're waiting in Galilee, and Peter had waited a long time, and he said some of my favorite words, I'm going to go fishing. Because they're sitting there waiting, and so he goes fishing. And that's when, of course, Jesus appeared to them on the shore. And so, again, over and over again, these events take place. But we weren't there. Beginning of verse 50, and he led them out as far as Bethany, and he lifted up his hands and blessed them. And while he was blessing them, he parted from them and was carried up into heaven. And they were worshiping him and returned to Jerusalem with great joy and were continually in the temple praising God. So we see, again, this change after that moment. They were charged, they were given this message, they were given some more understanding, with the promise that they would be receiving more. So we weren't there to see these things. We were not there to have our minds opened as they were, but we believe. Acts chapter 1, verses 9 through 11 also talks about his ascension. We weren't there to see it. Why stand you gazing at the heavens? Christ went up into the heavens, and the angels had to tell him, all right, you're done. Move along. Nothing to see here. All right, you've been given a task. Go do it. And so we weren't there to see those things take place. Just a few verses in closing. In John chapter 17, beginning of verse 19, for their sakes I sanctify myself, that they themselves also may be sanctified in truth. I do not ask on behalf of these alone, but for those who also who believe in me through their word. I sanctify myself, I make myself holy in order for their sakes. I prepared myself to be a sacrifice for their sakes. And I do not ask on behalf of these alone concerning the disciples that were there with him as he prayed in the garden on that occasion, but for those who believe in me through their word. In that night, Christ was thinking about us. In that night, he looked forward to the moment when the disciples, the apostles, would write these messages down, would convey, would preach the message of the gospel, and would get it into our minds and our hearts. And we would become part of that one flock. And we would be a part of that family that was promised. In John chapter 20, beginning of verse 27, then he said to Thomas, reach here with your finger and see my hands. And reach here with your hand and put it into my side. And do not be unbelieving, but believing. When we think about Thomas in this moment, we think about what? What's his nickname? Doubting Thomas. What? He gets a bad rap, in my opinion, because he only wanted what the other disciples had already had. Right? He wanted his face time with Jesus that the other disciples had already received. He just wasn't there. He had COVID or something like that and couldn't be there in the group. But he wanted his own time. Now, what does a text tell us that Thomas did in that moment? What's that? Yes. My Lord and my God. The text does not tell us that he even moved. Right? He doesn't tell us that he actually did those things. Jesus is whoomp in your presence. He turns right at you and says, see my hands. The text doesn't tell us he moved. I don't know that I would move except to say, my Lord and my God. And he acknowledges that in that moment. Because you have seen, he says, he said to him, because you have seen me, you have believed. Blessed are they who do not see or did not see and yet believed. So he's talking past tense. Those who didn't see him but believed the message of the ladies who came from the tomb and said, it's empty. He rose. There were those who believed, but the disciples were among those that weren't necessarily believing. Blessed, and we can turn this, he prayed for those in the future tense. Blessed are those who haven't seen and believe. And we'll close with 2 Corinthians chapter 5. 2 Corinthians chapter 5, beginning of verse 4. For indeed, while we are in this tent, we groan, being burdened because we do not want to be unclothed, but to be clothed, so that is what is mortal shall be swallowed up by life. And Paul, in his rather poetic way, is talking about the body. We are in this tent. And some days it feels like a broken, cheap Walmart tent that we're in, right? We are in this tent. Have you put up a Walmart tent? It says four people, about this big, right? So sometimes we feel like that tent. We're in this tent and we groan, being burdened because of life. We want to go on to glory. We want to go on. Now he, capital H, who prepared for us this very purpose is God, who gave us the Spirit as a pledge. Therefore, being always of good courage, and knowing that while we are at home in the body, we are absent from the Lord, For we walk by faith and not by sight. It acknowledges the fact that I have not seen what has been promised to me. But I walk by faith, not by sight. I acknowledge that I have not seen these things that eyewitnesses have written about, but I walk by faith, not by sight. I believe, because we are of good courage, as the text continues to say. And I say, prefer rather to be absent from the body and to be at home with the Lord, which he says on several occasions. Paul says on several occasions, I would rather be with Jesus right now. I think all of us have those days, right? And we should all have that heart that I would rather be somewhere else. On one occasion he says, to be absent and to be with the Lord is much better, but it's better for you that I stay. And he says here, prefer rather to be absent from the body and to be at home with the Lord. Therefore, we also have as our ambition, whether at home or present, to be pleasing to him. This song cries out to us as we sing it, and we cry out to one another, we weren't there, Lord, we weren't there, but we believe. We weren't there when these things happened, but we believe. And we strive every day, as this text in Corinthians tells, 2 Corinthians tells us, we strive every day to live, to please, whether present in the body or absent, to please him. And I hope that tonight you can go away from here encouraged. Wednesday is a day where maybe we need a little more encouragement to get to Sunday. But hopefully this has been a word of encouragement. Let's close with a prayer.